te vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Samambonam, chapter 54, the marriage of Krishna and Rukmini, text 34. Shri Shukuvacha, Kaya Paritrasya Vikam Patangaya, Sucha Vasusyan Mukha Radha Kantaya, Kantarya Vishram Sita Hima Malayaha Grihata Pada Karunyo Nayava Tata Shri Shukuvacha Taya Paritrasya Vakam Patangaya Sucha Vasushyan Mukha Radha Vakantaya Kartarya Vishram Sita Hima Malaya Grihata Pada Karanyo Naya Vartata Shri Shukuvacha Kaya Paritrasya Vikam Patangaya Sucha Vasushyan Mukha Radha Kantaya Kantarya Vishram Sita Hima Malaya Grihata Pada Karunyo Nyaya Vartata
Shri Shuka Vacha Taya Paritrasya Vikam Pritangaya
Go, Adam. Give it a go.
Shri Shukuvacha.
Taya Paritrasya Vikam Pitagaya.
Sucha Vasuyan.
Yeah.
Sri Shuku Vacha. Taya Paritasya Vikampanangaya. Sucha Shishan Mukumudakantaya. Katarya Visham Sita Imam. Pita Padan Karuno Tata Sri Shuku Vacha Shukuvacha. Shukadev Goswami said, Taya, by her, Paritrasya, in total fear, Vikampita, trembling, Angaya, whose limbs, Sucha, out of sorrow, Avasushyat, drying up, Mukha, whose mouth, Rudha, and choked, Kantaya, whose throat, Kataraya, in her agitation, Vishramsita, disheveled, Hima, golden, Malaya, whose necklace, Grihita, held, Pada, his feet, Karuna, compassionate, Nyavartata, he desisted. Translation in purport by the followers of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Rukmini's utter fear caused her limbs to tremble and her mouth to dry up, while her throat choked up out of sorrow and in her agitation her golden necklace scattered. She grasped Krishna's feet and the Lord, feeling compassionate, desisted. Translation again, please repeat. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Rukmini's utter fear caused her limbs to tremble and her mouth to dry up, while her throat choked up out of sorrow, and in her agitation her golden necklace scattered. She grasps Krishna's feet. And the Lord, feeling compassionate, desisted. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the worldly rule that one sister is the personification of mercy. Dayaya Bhagini Murti. Even though Rukmini was wicked and was opposed to his sister's best interest, Rukmini was compassionate towards him, and the Lord shared her compassion. Om Gyanatam Anandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Dhyena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So who here in the room is a sister? Put up your hand. A sister of somebody. So there's a few sisters. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is quoting the worldly rule. Obviously it comes from some either Vedic social understanding that one sister is the personification of mercy. Yes, women normally have a great quotient of nurturing capacity and generally very compassionate creatures. They feel people suffering, and especially those of people who are close to them, family members, friends. A very nice quality of the fairer sex. Men also have that, but not always tuned into it. And also don't know necessarily how to show it. So this is a continuation of the pastime of Krishna's kidnapping his first wife, Rukmini, from her Swayamvara. Actually, prior to her Swayamvara, the day before, she was going to the temple of Durga Devi and to pray for blessings. And simply her prayer was, what was her prayer? Somehow or other, let Krishna be my husband. She's a pure devotee. She was going to give up her life rather than marry someone else. This is her dedication, her devotion. Transcendental romance. And Krishna, of course, all the kings were there just to observe her beauty, because Rukmini's beauty is so rare, so uncommon. She's Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, appearing on the earth planet to assist Krishna, to again be devoted to Krishna in this particular Leela in the worldly sphere. She is young. There's a description of her beauty. Was there a description in Bhagavatam?
Yep.
There was. Teeth like jasmine buds. Many nice descriptions. Even
Being
here.
Unconscious.
Huh?
Seeing her beauty.
Yeah, she was very naive and innocent as well. Very captivating. You know, her eyes were looking around shyly. Large innocent eyes. A very charming feature. Everybody's attracted to innocence, and innocence combined with beauty. Very captivating. And all the kings, they fell off their horses. A lot of them fainted, you know, like in the that kind of cliche, you know. They fainted, fell off their horses and things, and Krishna just came out from the crowd in his chariot. Here I am, jump on, and took Rukmini's hand, pulled her onto the chariot, and then drove off. And then the kings, they were like, what's going on here? And they became very angry, you know, we've been cheated. So they donned their armor, got their weapons and things, and proceeded to chase Krishna. And Krishna was driving off quite nonchalant, in a nonchalant mood. And Balaram intercepted the pursuing troops and
smashed them.
He's very powerful, Balaram. There's stories of Bhima Sain, who is Balaram's disciple in club fighting. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there was millions and millions of soldiers, and there was huge armies, battalions of elephants. You can just imagine big elephants. You're talking huge elephants, you know, like their back is as high as this room. And like a whole, you know, huge area just with these elephants and elephant fighters, you know, so it's just like this moving forest of big tree trunks, just way up there, there's all these. And it's pretty intense. And Bhima, with his club, ran into the center of this huge ocean of elephant warriors, and swirling his club around, you know, smashed a path. You know, you imagine elephants, bodies get, anyway, I don't know how, there's lots of ladies here, not so many men, so maybe we won't go into the gory details. But anyway, he he carved a path through the elephant battalion. And it was like, it became like a hilly, you know, with all the bodies everywhere, it just became like a hilly. Anyway, so a similar thing happened. Balaram intercepted them. And he also had the Yadus with him. And he put a stop to their pursuit. And then there was a little conference between Shishupal, Rukmi, and the other disgruntled parties. And they said, oh, well, this is just bad luck. Too bad. Supreme destiny is supreme. But Rukmi said, no! I am now going to take a vow. I will not stand for this. I will now take a vow that I will chase Krishna, kill him, and bring back my sister for you, Shishupal. And if I do not fulfill this vow, I will not return to the city. Ever. This is my vow. Who is this nonsense Krishna? He's a cowherd boy. Yeah. What's he doing playing with the Kshatriyas? Huh? We are the Kshatriyas. We are the warrior class. He is a cowherd boy. In fact, his vana is unknown. Who is this guy? You know, peacock feather in his head, flute, playing with cows in Vrindavan. This is nonsense. I'm going to teach him a lesson. He was very upset because Krishna had gotten in the way of his plans. Now this is the nature of existence in the material world. We are conditioned souls. Rukmi also a conditioned soul. For a special function, of course. We know the Leela. But conditioned souls, they want to control and enjoy. They want the energy of this world to obey their will. I want an effect to happen. I want it. So therefore, I want the energy of the world to, you know, manifest my desire. I want things to move and align with my will. There's one film, and it's also a book, and things come out these days, The Secret. It's very big. It's like, you know, it's the cutting edge of New Age spirituality. And they've identified a truth about reality, that material nature is a mutable substance. And according to the desire of the conscious living beings, it mutates. Yeah. So therefore, they say, if you seed the quantum field, you know, they call the material energy the quantum field. Huh? If you seed it with desire and water those desires with absolute determination and doubtlessness that your desire shall manifest, then surely it shall be. But of course, you know, the Vedic understanding is a little more connected with reality. They say your desire is there, but also you need karma. You need the appropriate karma. Huh? Depending on how bound up you are in material nature, you know, you'll have more or less influence over your desire will have more or less influence over the material nature. If you're suffering in a hellish condition because of intense bad karma, and then you simply desire, oh, it'd be really good if I wasn't suffering, that won't necessarily come about because you've got some karma to deal with. But anyway, they've got an idea, you know, that desire is the ground, is the causal, desire is the causal level of being. From desire, your intellectual plan making manifests. From desire, the mind takes shape. From desire, the body takes shape. Both in this life and in the next life. And our current body is a manifestation of our past desire and karma. Karma is born out of desire. But the conditioned souls, they're in this world, they're hoping that the material energy, and they're expecting that because of false ego, that the material energy shall obey their will. That's what we expect. But then it doesn't all the time. Sometimes it might, if we're lucky. And therefore we get frustrated. That's the real essence of stress and anxiety, is that we want something to happen, but it doesn't happen. We want a certain effect to take place, to manifest, but it doesn't manifest. Or it doesn't quite happen how we want it to. And if we're humble, and if we're philosophically minded, and introspective, and sincere, we will come to the conclusion that our will is not actually the supreme will. There is another will. That will that defines reality, that's the definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He whose will defines reality. So that is Krishna. And Rukmi, he had some plan making going down. You know, he wanted something to happen. His sister should marry his friend Shishupal. But it didn't happen because Krishna stepped in and took Rukmini. And then he's frustrated because his desire didn't manifest. And he's thinking, I will teach Krishna a lesson. You know, Krishna, what is he? He's a cowherd boy. What's he doing playing with the Kshatriyas? I mean, come on. Krishna, you see, he was born of Vasudeva and Devaki. Yeah? In the prison cell of Kamsa. Yeah? Because Kamsa was oppressing. Yeah? You know, a large part of India at the time. Because he had heard a prophecy spoken from the sky that the eighth son of Devaki, the wife of Vasudev, Devaki is your sister actually, but the eighth son of Devaki will be the cause of your death. So he was not too happy about that. So he decided, I will oppress. You know, he was a bit of a demon. He wanted to reign supreme. So he started to oppress and he imprisoned Devaki and Vasudev. And killed their children one after another. And the eighth son was eventually born, that was Krishna. And out of fear, Krishna, he originally appeared as the four-handed Vishnu, but out of fear, Mother Devaki said, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still I consider you my son. Please become a small baby so we can hide you. And then Vasudev moved Krishna from the cell of Kamsa, the doors open, the guards fell asleep. This is all Yogamaya potency. And Vasudeva, he's a Kshatriya of the kingly order. And he moved him to his friend's house, Nanda Maharaj, the king of the cowherds, and his wife, Yashoda Devi. They just also had a child, and they did a little switch. And thus, Krishna's childhood took place in Vrindavan, although he was a son of a Kshatriya. So this is always one of the mysterious elements of Krishna, is the fact that his varna is indistinct. And later, Rukmini actually, when Krishna is talking to Rukmini, he will say, yeah, why did you marry me? And he's joking, you know. Why did you marry me? You know, people don't even know what my varna is. You know, I'm a kind of like this, I don't fit in. You know, I don't fit in to society. Don't you want somebody that's socially respectable? I'm a mystery. But of course, we know everybody is attracted and charmed and seduced by mystery. So Krishna's childhood took place in Vrindavan. He was herding the cows. He was associating with the cowherd boys, playing in the pasturing fields, playing his flute, charming all the residents of Vrindavan. So beautiful is Krishna. That supreme person, that manifestation. Krishna is the supreme beauty. And Bhagavad Gita, he says, from but a spark of my splendor springs the fascinating beauty of this world. From but a tiny fragment, insignificant, the flora, the fauna, the personal beauty, the physical and personality that we are so charmed and attracted to, people of this world. This is just a small, insignificant manifestation of Krishna's beauty. And you can imagine, well, you can't actually, not with your conditioned mind, but Krishna's beauty in the enchanted realm of Vrindavan, where the relationships are so sweet and intimate, everybody forgets actually who Krishna really is, in preference or in deference to the relationship they have with him, the rasa. This is the spiritual world. So, Rukmini's saying, what is this guy's varna, you know? He's a cowherd boy. He shouldn't be messing with the Kshatriyas. Time to teach him a lesson. So he jumped. He got his... Prabhupada just said he rounded up several thousand soldiers. And he And he went out on his chariot chasing Krishna, who was on his way back to Dwarka. And then he stood before Krishna and called out, "Hey Krishna, don't be a coward, turn around and fight me. Here I am with my strong arms, I'm going to teach you a lesson." So Krishna kind of, and then he shot some arrows at Krishna. And Krishna turned around and said, shot an arrow and cut his bowstring and then drove off again. So Rukmini said, "Hey, got another bow," and again shot some arrows, and Krishna again cut his bowstring, and then again cut his bowstring, and then smashed his chariot to pieces and killed his driver and his horses. And Rukmini's like, "Ugh." They pull out his sword and he's running towards Krishna. And Krishna's just like, "This guy's too much." Pulled out his sword. Oh, he smashed his sword and his shield. And he pulled out his sword and he was preparing to kill Rukmini. But of course, the personification of compassion, the personification of mercy, one's sister, Rukmini's sister, was there. Rukmini, who was a great devotee of Krishna. And more important to her, of course, was her relationship with Krishna. But still, out of that association, out of the relationship she had with her brother, she felt agitated with fear and anxiety that Rukmini would now be killed by Krishna. And this is what we're reading today. Shukadev Goswami said, "Rukmini's utter fear caused her limbs to tremble and her mouth to dry up." Her mouth is drying up. Her throat choked up out of sorrow. And in her agitation, her golden necklace scattered. She grasped Krishna's feet, and the Lord, feeling compassionate by this display of mercy, desisted. So, Rukmini was saved by the compassionate appeal of a devotee of Krishna. In Chaitanya Leela, where does this also happen? Who knows? Huh? Jagga and Madai. Yeah, Jagga and Madai. And Bangor. This is a famous pastime. This is a preacher's pastime. If you want to be an evangelist, a Krishna conscious evangelist, this is the type of thing you meditate on. This is Prabhupada's meditation. "Where is one more merciful than Gornitai?" So Jagga and Madai, they were drunkards. They were brahmanas, but they were drunkards and rapists. They used to pillage and plunder and harass people and intimidate people, get what they want. They'd fallen down a lot. And Lord Chaitanya had said to Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, "Go and preach. Tell everyone. Chant the holy name. Study Krishna. Hear about Krishna and chant about Krishna. Then your life will be perfect." So go and tell everyone that. And Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda would say, "Yes, sir." They were great devotees. So they went out preaching. And they'd go door to door and knock on the door and they'd say, "Yes, Krishna is your mother, Krishna is your father, Krishna is the treasure of your life. Chant Krishna, worship Krishna, and teach Krishna to others." This is what they'd say. Direct. The direct method. And people were taking it up because of their purity and intensity of devotion. You know, sometimes when you meet a personality who's absorbed in a certain state of consciousness with conviction, it has a profound effect when you contact them. This was the nature of Prabhupada, for example. The closest thing you watch the DVDs of Prabhupada, and his personal presence was astounding. Really, it was astounding. There's one, which devotee was it? Shrutikirti, I believe, yeah. No, it was Kadamba Kanana Swami. He was telling the story in Mayapur. They go to Mayapur, the sannyasis, regularly to charge up so they can distribute the nectar. He noticed one artistic personality, you know, wearing a beret kind of off to the side, dressed in like kami clothes, you know, in the temple. And he was in the temple every day, and from very early till very late at night. And what he was doing is chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And every time the deity, the altar would open up for the arati ceremony, he was there. And then, you know, the arati would finish and continue chanting all day. This is difficult. This is difficult when you have material desires. To chant constantly is the goal. To be constantly devoted to Krishna. Constant in constant meditation. That is the goal. Unbroken meditation. Samadhi. Krishna bhakti. This is the goal. But it's not easy. Because most of us have material desires. And that means, you know, you chant for a while and then... Anyway, this is nice. At least on principle. I'll say it's nice. For now I want to go and do some other things, you know. I want to get busy in this world, you know. I want to do things, I want to achieve, I want to gratify my senses. I want to fulfill my material desires. And then, so a certain portion of your time you can devote to sadhana, practice, developing existential purity, for building your meditation, whatever it be, sadhana. But you can't do that all the time, unless you're completely purified. So it's pretty amazing for a person to just chant all day. At the same time, have such an unassuming kind of facade. You know, just dressed like this. And so Kadamba Kanana Swami, he was fascinated. He went up to him and said, Haribol. He says, are you a demigod or something? Because what you're doing is extraordinary, you know that? And he said, and he said, well, maybe. Well, maybe I'm a demigod. Maybe. And he couldn't get, and Kadamba Kanana Swami couldn't get much more out of him after that. But later he got an email from this guy. He says, actually, I'll tell you the truth. In 1965, I saw that Swami chanting in the park. And I knew this guy is dangerous. Because I saw the influence he had over all his disciples. Simply by glancing at him, they'd become captivated and charmed. And they'd given up all their material desires, or all material aspirations, and simply devoted themselves to Krishna consciousness. So I knew he was dangerous, so I immediately avoided him. But it was too late. So now what can I do? So this is the nature of an influential personality, somebody absorbed in another state of consciousness. So Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, they were like that. Really like that. They were powerful, transcendental personalities. They are. And so therefore, just by seeing them and seeing their intensity, their devotion, people were immediately converted. They became converts. Yeah, they became followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They became Gaudiya Bhaktas. So, one day, Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, they were out preaching and they saw Jagai and Madai, these two drunkards, causing a big disturbance. There's a crowd kind of surrounding them, but from a distance, because everybody's kind of scared of them, and they were drunk and, making a spectacle. And Lord Nityananda said, hey, Haridas, let's preach to these guys. You know, if we can convert these guys, then Lord Chaitanya's reputation as the deliverer of the most fallen will be firmly established. That's good. Let's do it. And Haridas Thakur said, okay. So Lord Nityananda went up and said, hey, Hare Krishna, let me tell you something. You should chant Krishna, worship Krishna, and teach Krishna to others. Krishna is your mother. Krishna is your father. Krishna is the treasure of your life. Chant Hare Krishna. And they were like, who are you guys? You know, you guys are too much. You know, do you know who we are? We're Jagai and we're Madai. And we don't take this kind of attitude from people, you know. And Madai picked up a pot and threw it at Lord Nityananda and it cracked on his head, and blood began to flow and drip on the ground. Everybody was shocked. And Jagga, she said, no, Mara, you don't do that. This is a saintly person. This is not good. This is not good. Because this is the only offense they had not committed was Vaishnava Aparad. So this was a big problem. Vaishnava Aparad will finish any hope you have of spiritual advancement. Vaishnava Aparad means to offend a devotee. And word quickly got back of this event to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who immediately became angry like a lion, furious, and ran to that place where that incident had taken place, and manifested his Sudarshan Chakra and prepared to chop off the head of Mada for his heinous act of cracking Lord Nityananda on the head with a clay pot. But Lord Nityananda took the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said, no, please do not do this. Yeah. Show compassion upon them. This is my desire, that you show compassion upon them. And Lord Chaitanya was pacified somewhat by this. And then Madhai said, Jagai then surrendered to Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, and Lord Chaitanya accepted him. And then Madhai tried to do the same. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, I will not accept you. You cracked my devotee on the head. This is nonsense. You will burn in hell. Basically, he said, you're finished, mate. And he said, but actually there's one way you can be delivered. If you get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So, Madhai then prayed to Lord Nityananda and said, out of my complete ignorance, I have done this to you, and I can't tell you how sorry I am. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. And Lord Nityananda said, yeah, no problem. And then he also got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So this motif of the Lord's mercy, the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead being contingent upon the mercy of the devotee, this is consistent. We see this again and again. Even when Jesus Christ in Jerusalem was crucified, hanging up with the common criminals on the hill, surrounded by the vultures ready to eat the dead bodies, this great saintly person, wrongly crucified by the ignorant, left to die, it's understandable that the personality of Godhead might have been a bit upset about the treatment of his devotee. That's understandable. Right? But what did Jesus say? Forgive them! Please, Father, just forgive them, because they know not what they do. In ignorance, they do this. So this is the nature of preaching, actually. The devotees become conduits of the mercy of the Lord. There's even one, in samsara prayers, yasyat prasade bhagavat prasade, yasyat prasadat bhagavat nagatikitopi, dayan stuvam tasya yasyat chisangam vande gurusri charanaravindam. That by the mercy of the spiritual master one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the benediction of the spiritual master, without the mercy of the spiritual master, one could not receive the benediction of Krishna. So this is a principle, actually. When you enter, become a devotee, what you're actually doing is, because Krishna consciousness is personal, you're entering a community of persons, of devotees. And it's a universal family. It's an eternal family, actually, the family of devotees. And Krishna is the center of that family. He's the central object of worship. But generally we're introduced to the family through a devotee. And it's by their investment in our life that we're able to understand Krishna and be able to taste Krishna consciousness and make progress. What's Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother's name? I can't remember. Gopala Bhatt? No. Anyway, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had Lord Chaitanya lying in his house after he fell unconscious at the Jagannath temple. You know, he saw the deities, fell unconscious, and they thought, who is this? The temple guards, they thought, who is this nonsense? Another one of these sentimentalists, you know, pretending to be enlightened, experiencing Mahabhava simply for fame and profit. Kick him out. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came up, he's the superintendent of the temple, said, no, don't do that, because this is actually genuine. You don't know, but I know, because I am learned in the scripture. So, take him to my house instead. There we will wait until he regains consciousness. And then he was in his house, and his brother, I can't remember, what's his name? Anyway, his brother came up. His brother was a great devotee. And he said, wow, you have the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your house. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, hey, come on. Now, this is certainly an elevated soul. But this is, you're going a bit far, you know, he says. And they proceeded to have a bit of an argument about this point.
But then Gopinath.
Huh?
Gopinath Acharya.
Yeah, Gopinath Acharya, that's the one. Gopinath Acharya said, no, this is the Personality of Godhead. And he proceeded to quote all sorts of evidence. But it wasn't like rock solid. You know, I mean, well, many things are like this. You can make arguments, but then another person can kind of go around your argument by just undermining your premises, you know. So they were doing this, and they were kind of going back and forth. But Gopinath Acharya, he was so convinced. He said, look, you're a fool. You can't understand. You just can't understand. Sarvabhauma Acharya said, okay. I need to get angry, you know. So if he knows the Personality of Godhead, why don't I know that? Huh? I'm learned as well. Why aren't I convinced about this point? He said, well, the point is, Gopinath Acharya said, you don't have the mercy of the Lord, so you can't understand. You can't understand that Krishna is the Personality of Godhead. So the argument kind of finished like that. And, you know, eventually Lord Chaitanya woke up, the devotees came, they caught up with him. And they came and Lord Chaitanya woke up and it was Haribol. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came concerned. He said, this sannyasi is young and beautiful. Very young and beautiful. Generally you wouldn't take sannyas. Now that it's gone, there's a resolution that you don't take sannyas before you're 50 years old. And if you're going to take sannyas, you make sure your wife's well taken care of. You know, there's provisions for your children, your wife, if you've been married. And then you take sannyas. Because, you know, there's problems in the past. You know, people take sannyas too early, still full of material desires and anattas. They suddenly find themselves on a high pedestal, you know, with nowhere to go, and they freak out and they fall down. So generally you wait until you mature. Huh? You mature in Krishna consciousness and you've worked through a lot of the desires in the heart, and the lust and passion of the prime is subsided. But Lord Chaitanya, he was very young. How old was Lord Chaitanya when he took sannyas?
24.
24 years old. And the prime is so beautiful, golden complexion. He said, surely this sannyasi will fall down in the hands of a woman unless what? Unless I instruct him. Because I know the Vedanta, you know. I know the conclusion. So he said, he put this idea to the devotees, can I instruct them, you know? And the devotee's like, you don't know who you're dealing with here. You know, this is the Personality you've got here. So, anyway, I'm getting sick of this. Certainly he's a great personality, but you guys are going too far suggesting this. And Lord Chaitanya eventually got word to Lord Chaitanya that this is what he wanted to do. He said, yeah, certainly, here's my guru. So they sat down for 7 days. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya started preaching Vedanta Sutra and explaining it in his own way. And Lord Chaitanya just sat there, poker face, you know, grave, for 7 days. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because of the mystery of the Personality of Godhead, he didn't know what he was thinking. Too grave, you know. What is this guy thinking? Does he understand? Does he not understand? Eventually he asked, he said, you haven't said anything, you know. Do you not understand? Or do you understand perfectly? And Lord Chaitanya said, well, Yeah, I understand Vedanta Sutra, but I don't understand what you're talking about. You're speculating. You're taking the scripture and putting your own conceptual overlay over the top of that. You know, so I don't have any idea what you're talking about. You're speculating. And some of Pachacharya was a bit taken aback. But also by the gravity and strength of the personality of Lord Chaitanya, he was like, okay, maybe you can explain it. Lord Chaitanya said, sure. And then proceeded to explain it in such an amazing way, in such a perfect way, in such a self-evident way, that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya suddenly realized, yes, this is the personality of Godhead. And then he surrendered. And he became a Gaudiya. He joined the Gaudiya Madhva, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. He became a follower of Lord Chaitanya. He joined the Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, the eternal associates of the Lord. And later it came out, like, you know, how come I couldn't understand in the beginning? It's because, as Gopinath Acharya said, you don't have the mercy of the Lord. And how did you get the mercy of the Lord? By being the brother of Gopinath Acharya, who was a great devotee. So therefore, this is the way it works. And as preachers, what we have to do is take it upon ourselves to invest in the lives of people. Preaching is a personal thing. It's not that you sit up in front of some impersonal audience and just speak and feel good about your realizations. No, you don't do that. It's about contacting those specific personalities you come in contact with in your life, and investing in them one by one. The association of devotees expands, and it's so wonderful, it's so joyful to see new people get involved. This is what it's about. Investing, relationship first, and by the relationship they see your heart. And they see your heart, they open up to your influence. This is how it works. And by our sincere prayers and our sincere desire that this person become a devotee of Krishna, by that desire, you know, we might not have much potency, but somehow or other, Krishna's mercy will come. That's our prayer anyway. This should be our prayer. Because, you know, preaching is not about us being the big teacher. We're the big guru, we will enlighten this person. No, it's simply about facilitating, guiding, befriending that person in such a way that they connect themselves to Krishna, because Krishna is within the heart. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Kabhu Sadi Noi, something like that. Pure love of Krishna is eternally established within the heart of every living being. And by Sravanam Kirtanam, by hearing and chanting, we're hearing right now, we're chanting, I'm chanting, and you guys are hearing, or the holy name, or Bhagavatam, you know, hearing about Krishna, the ignorance becomes dispelled, and we suddenly realize, yes, I am a devotee of Krishna. So this is in the heart of everyone, and through the preaching endeavor, we're simply trying to get people in touch with Krishna within their heart, and therefore the desire and aspiration to be a Krishna devotee, a good Krishna devotee, will fructify. And everything becomes wonderful. And Krishna is pleased. Because this is the mission, actually, that we're doing. This is Prabhupada's mission, coming from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. If you know the philosophy, you know that this is our function, and this is what we should be fired up about. Okay, anyway, thank you so much for listening. Any questions or comments on these points? Yes?
I'm learning this way. You also mentioned in the first chapter where Lord Krishna was carried across the Yamuna.
Yoga Maya and Mahamaya.
Yeah.
By Mahamaya's potency, you think, I am this body. You think, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. I, me, mine. Your false ego expands in the material energy. And thus you suffer duality and frustration. By the Yoga Maya potency, you're connected to Krishna. Yoga means union. A union of your consciousness with the consciousness of the Supreme. So the yoga maya potency is that energy which creates that connection. And on a more deeper level, I guess slightly more esoteric, but it's very common knowledge in Krishna consciousness movement, that the yoga maya potency, actually this is a great mystery, but because of the elevated nature of what Srila Prabhupada has given us, we know, at least theoretically, that the yoga maya potency for the very advanced devotees causes them to forget that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. And suddenly they think, oh, Krishna is my beautiful son. Or Krishna is my friend. Huh? I'm equal with Krishna, actually. Or Krishna is my lover. This is yoga maya. This covers over. And there's one pastime when Vasudeva and Devaki actually got liberated from their imprisonment. This was when the wrestling arena, you know, the wrestling arena of Kamsa, you know, Krishna walked in to fight the wrestlers. You know, 16-year-old boy, something like that, young, and huge towers, wrestling towering wrestlers, and all the different people in the arena, they were. Had different relationships with Krishna, so therefore they saw him in a different way. And Vasudeva and Devaki were just thinking, this is the personality of Godhead. So eventually the wrestlers were killed, Kamsa was killed, and then Krishna and Balaram approached Vasudeva and Devaki. And Vasudeva and Devaki stood up, folded hands, and said, you are the personality of Godhead, and started offering prayers like that. And Krishna was saying, no. This is not our rasa, you know. And then so then what did he do? He started speaking in a charming way, and simultaneously he pulled yoga maya over their consciousness. And he said to them, actually, you know, normally a mother and father, they get to enjoy the childhood of their children. The awkward movements, the sweet voice, the playful activities. And in this way they get to enjoy and fall in love with their children, become charmed by them. And this is one of the rewards of parenthood. But because of the oppression of Kamsa, you weren't able to enjoy that. And we grew up in Vrindavan. You see, we have not been able to serve you sufficiently as our parents. And we're so sorry about that. So this is what Krishna started to say. Very charming. Appealing to the relationship, tugging on the heartstrings. And then, you know, the yogamaya potency covered them over, and they took Krishna and Balaram on their laps and began to cry. So sad. And also so happy simultaneously. And this is the nature. This is yogamaya. Yogamaya is the energy that controls the spiritual world. Mahamaya is the energy that controls the material world. Well, that's what it is. Yeah, all the potencies of the Lord are mystic, mystical. In terms that they have no other cause except His will, you know. Therefore, they're mystical. They're not scientific, in some speak. They're mystical. Yes?
Will there be any time in the future that everybody will be devotee of Krishna and not be harmful to others?
In Kali Yuga?
No, in existence.
Well, there's already a place for that. It's called the spiritual world, Vaikuntha.
No, but still there will be material world existing at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, material world is there. That will remain. In Satya Yuga, everybody's a Paramahamsa, you know. Meditating in the forest, eating only fruits, living for many thousands of years. There's no social government system because everybody's pure-hearted. But still, they're in the material world because they have some material desire, material aspiration to control and enjoy. So that's about as good as it gets.
What should be the reaction of a devotee? He should keep on tolerating until Krishna takes some step, or he should face the difficulties.
Tolerate? You mean difficulty? What type of difficulties?
Any kind of difficulty. He should be tolerant.
And you have to be more specific. What are you thinking of?
I'm asking in general, because I want to do it to apply.
Yeah, one should tolerate happiness and distress because they arise like winter and summer seasons and arise from sense perception or sign of birth. Therefore, they should be tolerated. Happiness and distress, this is Krishna's instruction in Bhagavad Gita. But you do that by being transcendentally situated, understanding yourself, I'm not the body. I'm not the mind. The mind and body has a karmic signature that is based upon, and karmic reactions are coming. But by being transcendentally situated in Krishna consciousness, one is able to tolerate these things because one's heart is full. This is the ideal. But also if we have some practical problem, you know, if we're banging our head against the wall, probably a good thing is to stop banging your head against the wall. So that comes down to specifics, you know. If somebody's doing something that's causing themselves problems, then, by guidance, they can often free themselves from unnecessary suffering.
You mentioned the point of becoming evangelist. Is there a good state of your existence?
Evangelist, to be a preacher, that means to follow.
Just to be evangelist.
Evangelist. Evangelistic. You know what that means? It's a Christian word. It means one who's a preacher.
Okay.
To evangelize means to go out and give the message to others.
Vengeless. Like not taking any revenge from anyone.
No, this is different. You bit misunderstood my word. Evangelistic means have a preaching spirit. On the customer loyalty ladder, people start off skeptical. What is this product? What is this service? I'm not interested. Huh? Then they become curious. And then they become, okay, customer. Okay, I'll buy it. And then they like it. They say, and then they become a loyal customer. Then they become an advocate. You know? They recommend it to people. This is good. And then they become evangelistic. Then they go out and say, take this, it's nectar! They become a preacher of the glories of the product or service. So it's a ladder. And we've got to move ourselves and also each other. We've got to move up this ladder until we become fired up to give it to others. And that comes from faith and realization and from picking up the bug or the fever from those who have it. And once we get this fever, this makes life nectar. This makes life very exciting in Krishna consciousness. This gain, if you do this with intensity, you gain such a momentum that struggles and difficulties become insignificant. Become less significant anyway, because you get momentum, and the best defense is a good offense. So that's something we should all do, and that's also the spirit, you know. Keshava once came up to me and said, "I like urban yoga. This is the mood. This is the mood." Srila Prabhupada set this mood. This is Lord Nityananda's mood. I like this mood. I'm going to support it. He said this outreach mood. Keshava is philosophically fixed up. So that's very encouraging to hear that from him. Any other questions? Comments? Okay, thank you so much. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.